Good evening. James McCanny here with My Science Hour, April 27th, 2017. James McCanny Science Hour at the Crossroads. And once again, this is a commercial-free show. I apologize a little bit for the last week, a little bit in the second week ago. I talked a lot about water filtration, and it may have sounded like an infomercial. So I apologize for that, but what I was doing was requested by a lot of people. They wanted a real lecture on the topic of water filtration. I had done two shows back in 2016 that I give away free with every purchase, whether it's a $6 book or a $700 water system, filtration system, or a big tank, whatever. But the those two lectures were on living in a toxic world. Part one was the science of toxic water. In other words, what goes into all of this toxin, what's it all about? And then the second part is, what can you do? What I did in the last week, including my paid cast, the second episode, it's called Water Filtration 101 and Water Filtration 102. And this is a complex topic. So anyway, I suggest you go listen to those. I'm not going to say any more. Those will be available for free on my webpage. And so anyway, this week's web paid cast, by the way, is going to be the ongoing series of Cosmos, The Real Story, where I take the talking points of Carl Sagan, 1980 Cosmos series, A Personal Voyage was the subtitle, and then the 2014 Neil deGrasse Tyson Cosmos series, an Odyssey, something Odyssey, whatever. Anyway, I use those two shows for talking points and then discuss real science. Okay, this week's main science topic, wow, this is so huge. India is going to have, they predict, the hottest summer on record. So they're preparing, they're getting ready for 125 degree temperatures. And man, wow, that's all I can say. I have been in hot places before, but when it's day and night, 125 degrees, and there's no relief, we're talking blistering heat. And, of course, the death toll and the people trying to survive, just get around water, etc. But I'm going to be talking about something that nobody else really talks about much, if at all. And that is really what is the cause of all of that. When I was a kid, there was a show on TV called Rama of the Jungle. And it was this Indian kid. He rode an elephant. He had friends that were tigers in the jungle. And that's what India was like when I was a kid. You know, and let me tell you, geologically, it wasn't that long ago, just a number of decades. And now India, they've cut all everything down. Mexico is the same. They've cut everything down. They've eaten all the birds or anything that moves, snakes, you know, anything that crawls and moves got eaten. So they're standing there with nothing. And the United States is on the verge of going that route, too. So anyway, this is very important. But understanding the real cause, and it isn't because there's people driving a lot of fancy SUVs up and down the road in India. The bulk of the population literally is on foot. You're lucky if you got a bicycle there. So anyway, I'm going to be talking in some of these fun facts. I will be getting into the energy consumption of the United States. And I'll be talking about solar panels. Are solar panels a solution? And boy, you're going to find out. That is a big no. And anyway, but to understand some of these numbers, and I'll be putting the numbers on the table, you'll be able to sit there and calculate these along with me to understand, oh my goodness. You know, anyway, first a couple commentary from listener emails. The first one, Trump, in a speech this week, makes a comment that he wants men on Mars in his first term. Well, I think he's talking to Elon Musk. I wouldn't doubt it if that's where this is coming from. And the CIA. But And then I was on John Moore's show yesterday. He said that China is talking about going to the moon, sending men to the moon in short order, you know, in the next couple of years. But this is, I hope they do. I mean, I really hope they do. But I think what we're in for is fake data. And NASA pretending, you know, getting along for the ride. You got Boeing in there. Jeff Bezos talking about going to Mars. Boeing, Elon Musk, and Trump. But none of them, believe me, none of them understand the problem of radiation. NASA sent up a satellite this past year, I believe it was. And they sent it into the Van Allen belts to take a measurement. And they put it into the electron Van Allen belts because those, in a sense, are the dangerous ones. Those are the ones that convert to X-rays. They're moving at relativistic speeds. The protons are not your friend either. But the electrons, that's where they decided to send the spacecraft. And they measured some low-energy protons, which doesn't make any sense at all. And they go, oh, there's no electrons in the Van Allen electron belt. But what they don't understand is that the spacecraft charges, and it repels the electrons. It stops them. It blocks them, that electric charge, the same process used in my plasma discharge comet model to charge up the region around the comet nucleus, and it repels the electrons from coming to the detector. And so we see this in all kinds of other spacecraft that are sampling the sun. I've gone into this many times before. But I think these people are in for a big surprise. But the big question, of course, is if there's no problem, then why hasn't NASA just flown back to the moon with the space shuttle? I mean, guys go up there, they're in the space shuttle for weeks and weeks at a time. That's enough time to go around the moon and come back in orbit, not land on the moon, but go around the moon and come back. Yeah, not a big deal, but nobody's done it. NASA did go up into the radiation belts once. They went up to about a 500-mile orbit. Right now, they're running at about a 100-120-mile orbit just outside the fringe of the what we call outer space, the edge of the Earth's atmosphere. And the astronauts' eyelids started glowing. They had a thing called they had something called shuttle glow. That meant that the space shuttle literally was glowing. They could see it from a distance, that the space shuttle had a glow around it. And they decided, the chemists got in the mix and won again. And the chemists, the same chemists who said that X-rays in comets were caused by a charge exchange, a process that maybe there is such a thing, but why doesn't it work in front of the Earth? Why only these so-called icy snowball comets, 30,000 miles to the sunward side? Well, you know, it doesn't make any sense. I've stood arm to arm next to these guys at scientific meetings, and if you read the fine print, they need an electron beam to make the process work. Well, where does the dirty snowball model, comet model, have an electron beam? And if it does, why doesn't Earth and every other planet have it? Why don't they have X-rays 30,000 miles out to the sunward side of Earth? Well, you know, that's because comets have a much bigger discharge of the solar capacitor because they're on elliptical orbits. And so anyway, just a couple comments. But the end result is NASA does not understand plasma phenomena in outer space. In 2017, they didn't understand it before. So, number one, will people actually go up and will they send people into the Van Allen belts? Why don't they send a mouse or a monkey or something first? You know, I don't think I'd send a monkey. How about a worm? It's going to get French fried just the same. And maybe put the worm in one of these magic vests. I call it the magic vest. This company came out and said, this is to protect astronauts from radiation. And it's this little plastic vest that looks like something Flash Gordon might have worn in a 1930s movie. So anyway, don't want to dwell on that too long, but I'm not sure what these people are drinking or smoking over there. But, you know, and Trump, unfortunately, a nice guy, but a little bit thin on some of the issues dealing with science. So I hope they do it, but, you know, I think what we're going to get is a lot of faked movies. I mean, we already know that Matt Damon looked pretty much like he was on Mars to me in the movie. So there's no question that they can do a much better job of faking today than they did back in the Apollo era with the footage and the films. And maybe they'll even figure out how to put stars in the pictures these days. But giving Trump a little bit of credit here, I believe he was joking with the astronaut, this Peggy, I forget her last name. She's been up in space. She set a record 530-some days, and that's commendable. But, and then she's the one that said they were going to go in 2030. That was somehow the plan. They're already testing the big rockets, supposedly. And then Trump jokingly said he hopes that it would be in his first term, but at least in his second term. And I think he was, you know, in a bit serious, but also a bit jokingly talking to her as she set this record for the nation. And that's commendable. But let me tell you something. If you're going to Mars, 530 days ain't enough. And you're going to be dealing with a lot of issues. And they're very protected where these astronauts are in the space station. They're very, very, very protected from radiation. They don't have radiation issues. And they've got a little radiation shell they can go into, a protective chamber, in case there's a solar storm that comes in and potentially affects the astronauts there. So they're very protected, and NASA has never ventured outside of low Earth orbit since the Apollo program. What does that tell you? Somebody's not telling the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Okay, now here's from a listener. It says, scientists consider cloud brightening to preserve Australia's Great Barrier Reef. And so this is an article that comes out of a quote from an anonymous source, MIT Technology Review. It says, a group of Australian marine scientists believe that altering clouds might offer one of the best hopes for saving the Great Barrier Reef. And so it says they've been meeting and talking about how to cool the biggest reef system on the planet. It says, last year, as El Nino events cranked up open temperatures, at least 20% of the reef died and more than 90% of it was damaged. The Australian researchers took a hard look at potential ways to save the reef, and they're talking about then seeding it. They say that next month he plans to start computer modeling. Oh boy, isn't that swell. Computer modeling, the magic words. If it's in a computer, it must be right. Okay. Then they say they're collaborating with Silicon Valley's Marine Cloud Brightening Project, which has spent 7 years developing a nozzle that they believe can spray salt particles of just the right size and quantity to alter the clouds. So they're attempting to raise money, Okay, so how come nobody mentions Fukushima, the reactor in Japan that has destroyed the Pacific Ocean? Well, this is more, you know, this is exactly what the destroyers want to do, is cloud the issue, put the money into nonsensical research. Look at this, 7 years researching something, the reef is dying, and nobody is looking. Nobody is even looking or making measurements to see what the radiation effects are on the Great Barrier Reef, one of the world's great resources that is being destroyed in a couple of years when, gee, just happens to be since Fukushima. I thought that global warming is something that's been going on for 100 years. So why is the last 3 years, you know, so much, so important with this global warming argument? But in the last 3 years, that's since Fukushima kicked in, and that the radiation has reached that point in the Pacific Ocean, damaging 90% of the reef, killing it off 20% of it, one of the largest ecosystems on the planet, next to the Brazilian rainforest or other locations on the planet, the Great Barrier Reef of Australia, a remarkable world resource that is literally goes back millions of years with the life, the forms that are there, etc. Just a quick mention that Google and Boeing and Apple computers are looking at making some type of a joint venture. It's not really clear yet, on putting thousands of broadband satellites into outer space, mainly dealing with what we call remote viewing, taking pictures of stuff. And then second, we know Google is already heavily involved in this, but secondly, dealing with broadband communications. And so these big players have the kind of money that it takes to get into that business. Anyway, just making mention, I'll be following that story as time goes on, as we get more details. Just a quick mention on polling. We're starting to see people put out polls. Oh, this poll says such and such. That poll says such and such. We see conflicting polls. When are people going to learn that polls do not tell you really anything and you can't trust them? There have been articles, there have been all kinds of criticism of polls, not the least of which have been mine. And basically, a poll is, it's a statistical sampling, and that's exactly it. If your base sampling pool is distorted, then your poll is going to be distorted. So you can pretty much say whatever you want, and we all know the polls, the predictive polls for the 2016 presidential election were a bit off, and that caused the Hillary Clinton to just forget about campaigning. She didn't even go campaign. She just, you know, plus a little bit of cheating here and there that helped quite a bit. But remember, if you want to hear my paid cast, it's back in, when was that? Was it February, where I give a lecture on the basically the real results and four mathematical methods, regression mathematics, to show how the real election results were something like 82 million Trump to about 45 million Hillary Clinton. And all the regressive mathematical analysis, completely different take on how to use the data. Now, these are not polls. This is actual data to show that there was basically a huge, as much as 17 million cheated votes in the that went for Clinton, you know. And so people keep repeating that she won the popular vote. She did not win, by any stretch of the imagination, the popular vote. But now we're seeing polls again. And what a mess the news media is. You got the ultra-right, you got the ultra-left, you've got the alternative media, you've got Alex Jones, who spends most of his time raving about how he gets attacked and how you should buy his products, and, you know, spends really not a lot of time. He spends some time digging up some very important facts, and I got to give him credit. He's broken a lot of stories. He's covered a lot of stories. But Alex, stop complaining. We're all getting pounded out here. You know, shut up and just do your job. If you just do your job and report the real news, then you don't have to worry about anything else. People will be on your page. But I'm going to tell you, people are going to get sick of you complaining all the time about how you're getting pounded. I get pounded all the time. I don't just sit here and talk about it all the time. So, but alternative media is a mishmash of really a lot of distorted information, people with strange views. So it's really, but the problem is, here's the problem. Not many people, and I could list you some people that do get down to the brass tacks of issues, but how many of them bring it up to the level of the Jesuit banking, the Vatican banking, the major decisions that have been made that flow through the United Nations, through the United States federal government, through the all of the drone congressmen, etc., that are in the United States Senate and legislature who've been compromised. And, you know, people like Kim in North Korea, who was a New World Order pawn, you know, and a banker. He was educated in Europe to do exactly what he's doing. He's protected. You know, you got to get to the core issues and then also realize that, like, well, I'll be talking about India and energy issues and, you know, cutting down all the trees and what it's done for India and where the United States is. But we got to, you know, right now, Trump is trying to get the big garbage out of Washington, D.C., and he's having a big struggle. That's why he's meeting with congressmen. But once you get that out, we're still dealing with, oh, my goodness, we're using way too much energy. You know, we're not developing culture and And, you know, the kids today really don't have a lot to do. Schools are a failure. They're teaching all the kids the same thing. How much sense does that make? That's about the dumbest thing. You know, and they call that education. They don't take a kid in and say, what are your talents? What do you want to do? You want to be an artist? You want to play guitar in a rock band? You know, start developing those talents and promote these kids instead of sticking them off so the kids got to go home in their garage and develop their talents on their own with, a lot of cases, no help at all, you know, in spite of school. These kids are coming up and succeeding in spite of school. Anyway, insane. Just another quick note, something I'll be pounding on, that we have to have a complete new registration of voters before the next election. 100%, all of the voting lists that are in existence, erase them, have people go in, and you know this argument that, oh, well, little old ladies can't get in there. Well, no, we got a couple years to get all the people in to register to vote. And so it's not that big a problem, but you've got, you remember my list when I talked about the voting and the cheating, the 11 different ways to cheat to win an election, a federal election. And mainly it had to do with voter registration and the incredibly bad system of voter registration for one vote for one person. Anyway, that's something I'll be continuing to work on in the future. In terms of the future, what I see in the future, what you're going to see in 10 years from now, the front runners, for example, in outer space, in space tourism, in space technology, in space entry and exit, and things like that, it's going to be totally different than anything you see today. Will people be on Mars? I don't know. I really don't know. I think 10 years, given the radiation problem, you know, we might have nice movies of people going to Mars, but will anybody really go to Mars? I don't know. We'll have to see. Something I'm working on in the background here is hair analysis, where people like you, just the average, you know, person on the street, can go and get hair analysis to learn what toxins are in your body. And some of you are going to be very surprised. I know I've talked to people, they find out they're toxic with radioactive substances or other toxins, and they just don't know. They're walking around toxic people. So that's number one. And so I'm going to try and get that put together. It's one of my priorities. I thought I had something good before and it fell through. Anyway, I won't even go there and talk about that, but basically you need something that gives you an idea what toxins are in your body or those of your family. Number two, detox. I'm working on getting some systems, and I probably will not be in the money chain with either of these. I'm just going to be directing people or have people go to find their own solution for detoxification. And it's something that I've done before in my career, but it's not my main focus. So I'll probably just be directing people or giving suggestions. And there are people out there who will be very happy. They're experts in that field. They'll be very happy to help you. I do have my Via Viente product, which I love myself. It's just something, but I'm probably not going to have 50 products to, you know, health products and all that. There's a lot of people that do that. That's not my field. I'm very good at water filtration. That's a specialty, and I have the best products in the world. So that's part three of this program. First, find out what the toxins are. Second of all, detox. And then third of all, drink filtered water. Because I don't care who you are or where you get your water from, in this day and age, you would be rare, extremely, extremely rare, if you had water that did not need filtration. And the other reason I gave those lectures last week, both the regular show, the commercial-free show, and my paid cast, is because there are so many products out there that don't work in water filtration. People are making claims, making advertising claims, not telling you the whole story, like that you have to put add-ons on their filter just to take arsenic and fluoride out, and that those add-on filters only last for 500 gallons. So you have to buy basically 10 sets of them to match their claim, their recycling claim on their main filters. So you're paying hundreds and hundreds of dollars just to remove fluoride and arsenic. And I don't have that. I have all-in-one filters. Anyway, that's the three-part program is, number one, find out what your toxins are. That I'm working on. I'll hopefully have that posted with some references. Detoxification, also have some references there. Like I say, I'm not going to be myself in the money loop on those two. But then three, water filtration. And then also, I like that Via Viente product. It's something that people should take on a regular basis because it has it's like a daily supplement that has literally all the things that you're missing. Even if you eat good salads every day, fruit every day, a lot of the fruits and vegetables that you get are grown with ammonia fertilizers, and there's no food value there, boys and girls. Looks nice, looks like a beautiful apple or asparagus or cucumber, you know, lettuce, whatever it is, but there's no food value there. Very little food value. It's not like it grew in the soil, absorbed minerals from the soil, and the farmers recycled. No, they're growing the same thing over and over again all year long with ammonia fertilizers. It does not make for quality food. And then you got GMO plants that the animals eat, then you're eating meat full of chemicals. Oh my goodness, it's a disaster. So anyway, I'm working on quite a few projects in the background that are meant to help people, along with energy, water, things like that. So, okay. Anyway, just talking a little bit about the future. Okay, on to the main science topic. India. Wow. Let's start 2 years ago, 2015. India had the worst heat record, heat summer on record. And it got up to like 125 degrees. This is Fahrenheit. And, at night it doesn't cool down much. And these people are suffering. But you've got, 1.2 billion people in this country in very concentrated areas. They've cut down all the trees. They've killed off any of the animals. And there's nothing to absorb the sun. Now, let's look at just what does a plant do. Let's say you have a canopy forest. Well, about 6% of the sunlight goes into making leaves and bark and tree and other shrubs. It's actually about 6% of the sunlight is absorbed and converted. But what else does it do? It blocks about 90% of the sun from reaching the ground. Now, let me explain why plants are green. And my teacher got this wrong when I was going to school. They said, well, the plants are green because that's because of photosynthesis, and green is the photosynthesis color. And no, the plants are green because, and they look green because they're reflecting the green light. If the plants did not have a green color, they would burn up because green is the most energetic color in the spectrum. And so at any rate, the plants look green because they're reflecting the green color. That's why plants are green. So they reflect that, but all the other colors they're absorbing, and that's what goes into photosynthesis. And about 6% of the sunlight that reaches them goes into creating plant mass, biomass, etc. And of course, when the plant dies, that is a chemical storage. So when you burn the wood or the plant or whatever it is, or leaves that are dry, they burn because what you're doing is you're releasing those chemical bonds, those carbon bonds, and they're being released, and that's the energy release with the burning process. Okay, so we're storing up energy. We're taking energy away from the atmosphere. Now, if you cut down all the trees, number one, that's about 6% of the energy right there that comes through that is not being absorbed and being stored. But then you've got about 90% of the sunlight which just hits the flat ground and heats it up. And once that ground heats up, we know this from the tropics, we know this from desertification, We know that the Sahara Desert was a vast functioning forest at one time, and it's alleged that the Roman army went in and cut it all down to make ships. The Romans had a vast navy. If you look at, there's some good movies that deal with this, but they had vast navies. So did the Greeks, and they made these massive, big wooden ships. Well, that all takes wood. That all takes manpower. But the end result is that in the tropics, especially around the equator, equatorial region, or any place really, if you cut down all the trees, then what you're doing is you're allowing the sunlight to hit, and that is causing global warming. So why are not the global warming enthusiasts simply saying, all we got to do is plant trees, reforest the earth, and there are ways to do that. There's plants that will grow on the desert in abundance. And once they start absorbing the water, once they stop blocking the sunlight from hitting the ground, then the clouds can come in and rain, and then it'll start to grow up profusely. So basically, we have to re-green the earth. And I have a picture a couple of weeks ago. I showed some clear-cut areas and some of the issues dealing with that, not only the local ecological issues, but the increase in localized temperature. And I've talked to people in various parts of the world, people that were older that grew up in certain parts of the world, and I'd say, what was it like here before when you were kids? And they said, well, it was a lot cooler. And they talk about how there was fog in the morning. And I'd say, well, what happened? And these are in places where you don't have a lot of automobile traffic. There's more horses than cars, let's put it that way. And literally, they say, because they cut down all the vegetation, they cut down all the trees. One tree at a time, like one brick at a time, building a city. One brick at a time, you build a city. One tree at a time, you deforest the world. Okay, so enough said there. I'm going to go into some actual numbers here. And first of all, just quick, once again, mention Mexico, a place where I lived. And when the Aztecs lived there, it was basically a jungle. Mexico was highly forested up into the mountains, the pine trees. A lot of the places are still there. You go up into the mountains, beautiful, beautiful pine forests, or you go down to the jungles, you know, beautiful jungles. But then there's areas you see where they simply have cut down everything. And there's nothing left there because the rain, the clouds, there's too much heat coming off the ground. The clouds can't come in and drop the water, so the clouds bypass that area, go around, and those places remain very dry. Also, the United States, where's the United States heading? If you look at a map of the depletion of the land in the world, literally the entire United States has degraded soil to very degraded soil. You look at the breadbasket, and this goes up into Canada. A lot of the wheat areas, growing areas of Canada, are in this also. But the central area from Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, to Iowa, Minnesota, Kansas, Missouri, Nebraska, a lot of these places, the Mississippi River Valley, all the way down to New Orleans. And then out on the West Coast, the San Fernando Valley and the big agricultural areas of California, all highly, highly depleted. And then when you look at the world, between very degraded soil and degraded soil levels, and then areas simply that are desert, that makes up about 80% or more of the entire world. And this is not counting what they call the Arctic dry zones. In other words, it's the water is simply frozen there and nothing grows. But very few places on the planet. Canada has a lot of good soil left. Places, areas of South America, often the very deep heart Central America. But the world has been depleted basically by human use, human virus basically, degrading the soil and not putting anything back. So what is part of this cycle? We have to understand that flushing human waste down the toilet, adding it to water with a lot of chemicals and putting it through a treatment plant that does not take out the chemicals, that just breaks down the human waste and then flushes that back into the water system, is a bad, bad method. And so what do we have to do? We have to take human waste and convert it into fertilizer, and you can do that. There's a myth that human waste cannot be used for fertilization, but it has to be broken down properly, and then it can be used effectively for fertilization. There's this myth that it's going to create bacteria that are harmful to people, and that's true, but it has to be handled and managed correctly, and then you can put back into the soil what's being taken out. And the same for animal waste. But anyway, that's not the point of this show. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to pick on New York State. And this is just, I could have picked on any state, but I picked New York because it's a high population region, and it's also got a low population region. Somewhat of a mixture. It's one of the highest with one of the lowest. I could have picked California. They use a lot more energy. Texas uses a lot more energy. But let's look at this. These are just some numbers, and I'm going to put all these numbers together for you. And then at the end, I'm going to tell you where I'm going to go, where I'm going with this. First of all, we're going to look at the so-called greenhouse effect and with the use of energy. And then we're also going to look at what it would take if you had this idea, which is, you're going to find out, is really crazy, that somehow solar panels could provide us with energy relative to providing our energy needs. Okay, so let's look at it this way. New York State, the island of Manhattan alone, just to give you a feel for the amount of solar energy, the solar energy, and this is across the all spectrums, not only visible light, but all across all spectrums of the electromagnetic spectrum, receives about 80 gigawatts of energy. That's a constant rate. Like if you could change that 100% into electricity, you could run 100 gigawatts worth of electrical power. And that would be quite a bit. But let's just make a quick calculation. If you could do that, what would that cost? Well, that would cost around, this is at the current rate of about $2 per watt for solar panels, and that does not include batteries or installation, etc. That's just the solar panels. So these are very low numbers. But that would run around $160 billion. That would produce enough energy, basically, to provide electricity for the state of New York. Well, that sounds like not too bad a figure. But the problem is that solar panels only work on an average of 4 hours per day, so what we call sun hours. And so now you would have to buy batteries to store up the energy to run the other 20 hours of the day. And because the sun, you know, it shines brightly during part of the day, but then the cost of the batteries at current technology prices would be in the, well, astronomical, it would be off the charts. And so anyway, but where we're going with this, I'm going to get down to the actual total numbers for the United States. And once we look at those, so I'm going to give you just a rundown here of the energy that is used in New York State. Now, this is to produce electricity. And this is only electricity. We're not talking about automobile fuel. We're not talking about transportation, petroleum, other sources of energy. Okay, so New York, 31% of its energy, electrical energy, comes from nuclear power. It's around 5.4 gigawatts. Okay, and just to remind you that the larger nuclear power plants run around 2 gigawatts. And so I think there's a total of 4 major plants, nuclear power plants, in New York State. But okay, 5.4 gigawatts. 42% of the electricity comes from natural gas, from burning natural gas. That's around 13 gigawatts. So that's about 2.5 times the amount that they get from nuclear. And these are rough figures. Now, coal produces a minimal 2.8 gigawatts, not very much at all, about half as much as the nuclear plants in the state of New York. And this is not the national average. These are a bit different because the national average, nuclear is only about 20% of the national average electric. Coal puts out about 40%. And then other forms like natural gas putting out about maybe 15%. Those are round numbers. Okay, so coal plants in New York State, 3%, not very much. Hydro, New York gets a lot of hydro. And so some of that comes in from Canada, because remember that Quebec is basically hydro-dependent, and they run about 98% of their electricity comes from hydro, and they sell a bunch of that down to New York. Petroleum, just burning of petroleum for electricity, 8.3 gigawatts, so that's about 1.5 times the amount from nuclear plants, about a little more than half of what comes from the natural gas source. And then wind, they claim there's a gigawatt of installed base in New York of wind power, but conservatively that would be running around 100 megawatts, not enough to sneeze at. And so anyway, given these and given the total, and then also adding in the amount of energy from other sources, it turns out that only the sunlight landing on the island of Manhattan is actually more than the amount of energy used in New York State. So that's quite a remarkable statement, because that tells us that solar energy is very prevalent. However, if you put in an installed solar power, solar panels, that is, first of all, they're going to have about a 20-year lifetime. So you have to amortize this over a 20-year period. And after that, you have to replace the whole thing at 20 years from now pricing. The actual cost, like I say, they're saying this price will come down, but at $2 per watt, just for the panels, if you look at installation and the batteries, we're talking probably around $2 trillion to provide New York State with power from solar. So solar is nice, but then the other problem is you run into, of course, that the power companies don't want alternative power. They don't want any kind of alternative power because they're basically addicted to the nuclear, natural gas, petroleum, hydro, whatever other source. And remember this, this is the other point I want to get to, that all of this energy, even if it comes from hydro, which we believe is a clean source of power, it turns into heat. And this is one of my main points here. All of this turns into heat. So we have a total electrical generation capacity of New York State of around 34 gigawatts, which is half of the energy that comes in on Manhattan Island alone, the island of Manhattan in New York City. So clearly there's a lot of solar energy coming in. But then you come back to the fact that 6%, if you could reforest New York, remember when the Europeans first came to New York, it was woods. It was solid woods out there. There was a little bit of maybe prairie and other formations, but basically New York was wooded, just like all of the other eastern states, Vermont, New Hampshire. Some of them are still fairly rural, Maine, etc. But the entire eastern United States, east of the Mississippi, was solid woods. And so that kept things fairly cool. One by one, the trees were cut down, burned up, hauled away, whatever they did, made into furniture, housing, whatever they did. And then the great forests in the west were cut. And when they first cut those, when they first started cutting, they said, there's an infinite supply of wood. We will never, ever exhaust this. Within 10 years, they had it all cut down, and then it was receiving second growth. We're now looking at probably third, and in some cases, fourth and fifth generation growth in the great western forests. And so when you say that wood is a renewable resource, yeah, if you wait a long enough time. But remember that a canopy forest takes thousands of years to develop to the point where the trees are fully grown and they're growing up and they have maybe 200-300 year lifetime, and nothing is on the forest floor because they're literally blocking so much of the light. They're at canopy stage. They're blocking so much of the light that there's very little light that gets down to anything trying to grow up down below. And it's only when one of those big babies falls down that something else can come up in its place. Okay, so once again, we're back at this issue of the greenhouse effect, or global warming, as they say, and measuring temperature change. So is the temperature change due to, look at all the energy we're burning here. We're burning 34 gigawatts of energy, and then we can convert this into gigawatt hours or other forms of total energy. But that's if you calculate over hours or days or whatever. But the entire point is that the use of inert materials, whether it's nuclear, whether it's natural gas, whether it's coal, even if it's hydro, that energy from moving water is being converted into heat energy. And it's you're taking moving water and converting it into heat energy. And I would go a bit farther and I talk about some other technologies, but I'm not going to go there on this show. They'll be talking about that in the future. But and then petroleum, of course. So you're taking inert substances out of the earth, burning them, consuming oxygen. And in the case of nuclear, of course, you're actually consuming quite a bit of oxygen also. And you're getting quite a bit of CO2 footprint. So it's a real myth that somehow nuclear is not CO2, does not have a CO2 footprint. But the point is that here's the actual issue, that you are burning, you are contributing into the heat equation of the earth every day, this vast amount of energy, and also burning cars, etc. Now, before I get to the final point, I want to do this for the entire United States. So this is coming off of the government statistics, and these are round numbers once again. This is in trillions of BTUs. BTU is a British thermal unit. It's a unit of energy, and you can convert it to kilowatt hours, which is a unit of energy. And so 3,400 BTUs is equal to 1 kilowatt hour of energy, if you're familiar with those units of energy. The kilowatt hour is what we use to measure electricity at your house. That's what you pay every month. You pay a per kilowatt hour fee, plus probably a monthly fee, and then maybe some taxes, etc., and that's your electric bill. But 3,400 approximately BTUs, British thermal units, is equal to 1 kilowatt hour of electricity. And let me just put 1 kilowatt hour into perspective. 1 kilowatt hour is 1,000 watts burned in one over a period of 1 hour. That would be the equivalent of 10 100-watt light bulbs, the old incandescent 100-watt bulbs, 10 of those burning for 1 hour. That's 1 kilowatt hour. Okay, so first I'll give these numbers in trillions of BTUs. So these are big numbers, but we'll just go down these and then I'll give you some numbers at the very end. So I'm trying to work down to what it would take to provide the United States with energy for these sources. This includes transportation, gasoline, natural gas, etc., that are used for transportation. And what would it take to convert to solar panels? And you're going to find out that this is probably not possible. Okay, so here we go. United States, trillions of BTUs. These are units of trillions of BTUs for fossil fuels, 80,000. For nuclear power, 8,000. So you can see the renewable, what they call fossil fuels, which would be everything from coal, etc., that are used for creating. And then electricity, 98,000, that's trillion BTUs of electricity. This is the United States. Renewables, this would be like hydro, etc., 9,400 trillion BTUs. Natural gas, 27.5 thousand, 27,500 trillion BTUs. And don't worry about these numbers if you're getting a bit lost here. These are just big numbers, but I'm going to put them all together. Gasoline, 16,500 trillion BTUs. So add all these together, and you come up to the tidy sum of 239,400. Let me round this up to 240,000 trillion BTUs. Okay? Now you convert this to kilowatt hours, and this is what I'm going to get at. We come out to 70 trillion kilowatt hours of equivalent energy. This is for all of our energy use in the United States. This is for industrial, this covers everything, your car, trucks, semis, trains, you know, everything. Heating your house in wintertime, whatever. 70 trillion kilowatt hours of energy. Now, given that it's $2 per watt at the current cost of energy, to run this on a continual basis, say that the sun shone 24 hours a day, say that the sun sat over the United States 24 hours a day, and it was brilliantly clear, and your solar panels were always directed exactly at the sun, it would cost $140,000 trillion for the solar panels to do this. Now remember that we're at about a 1-to-6 ratio of sun to non-sun hours. So multiply that by 6. This does not include the battery packs or the storage systems or the infrastructure to put this in. So clearly, let me read this number again. This is just for the solar panels at today's solar panel rates. $140,000 trillion. Now, the national debt of the United States, they say, has gone from $10 to $20 trillion. That's the money that we, the money we owe to the fictitious bankers that create this money on a piece of paper out of thin air. Okay. So that's at $20 trillion. That's the U.S. national debt that's been built up over decades due to wars, etc. Okay, that's $20 trillion. What it would cost to put in solar panels to give us the power we need to run our society is, once again, $140,000 trillion. So let me do a little calculation here. That is 7,000 times our current national debt. No, excuse me, while you all recover and get up off your chairs and stop laughing, etc. So when somebody comes up and tells you that solar panels are going to solve our energy future, no, ain't going to happen. All the money on the planet. Now, this does not even begin to stress the idea of manufacturing all of this. Okay? Now, from all of these energy sources, nuclear, coal, natural gas, hydro, petroleum, and etc., from the other sources, biomass or whatever you want to contribute, things that are minuscule, to all of these energy sources are being put together. You know, they're building a mega liner right now. I believe it's being launched right now out of South Korea that is 4 football fields long. It's a super tanker, double hull, and supposedly contains enough oil to run the United States oil consumption for a single day in one boat, one trip coming over here. And the cost of this, I thought this statistic was rather amazing also, that the cost of this boat, which is, you know, I forget, hundreds of millions of dollars, will be paid for in its first 4 trips, bringing the oil across from the Mideast to the United States. Now, do you think there's money in the transportation of oil from the Mideast? Why do you think these wars in the Mideast keep going on? We don't need oil from the Mideast. And luckily, we got a president in there who's saying, let's start using domestic oil. And the goal, what I see in the future, is within 10 to 20 years, we won't even need that domestic oil. But secondly, we burn way too much energy. We are an addicted culture of energy. And, you know, this is the problem. This is one of the biggest problems that we face. So when, you know, now Trump is trying to deal with rebuilding bridges that are falling down and infrastructure and getting jobs back and bringing factories into the United States and getting private investment into places where government has previously been supporting the whatever it is, getting private investment. So anyway, those are, you know, that's because of decades of malpractice, malfeasance in government. Decades. But that does not get us down to the answering the question, why are we using all this energy? Why are we using, you know, 240,000 trillion BTUs of energy per year? That is insane. We're cutting down all the forests. We're destroying the land. 80% of the world's land is destroyed and would take a great amount of effort to bring it back. The most fertile land that we had through the heartland of the United States is destroyed. I've driven through there. You see in the fall, beautiful, beautiful fields of corn, all because of Monsanto Frankenstein corn growing with glyphosate poisoning and then ammonia fertilizers. It all looks wonderful. But then you come by a farm where the poor guy just, he probably went bankrupt. He couldn't farm that year. And it looks like the surface of the moon. It looks like the surface of the moon. So at any rate, the final point is that all of this talk about global warming is not because you're driving your SUV up and down the road, because all of this energy that goes into the atmosphere every day is gazillions of times more than any global warming contribution. Very simply put, we are burning all of this fuel and the world is able to dispel this heat. The problem is the sunlight, which is the major energy contribution, and also nobody includes the electrical contribution, which in some cases may be more than the direct solar light that comes into our atmosphere and heats up the atmosphere. So the electrical component, nobody's even talking about. Okay, so anyway, I hope this makes sense, but number one, we got to cut down the energy usage. Number two, well, I've made these points. I just want to direct you to my homepage. I got about half a minute left here. My water filters are on sale. I have my new high flow rate commercial grade water filters and the tanks, the large tanks. So all of that is there. And I want to stress whole home water filtration systems. The small, the MR5 system that I have posted on my webpage at 7 gallons per minute is a wonderful system. And if you're looking at buying, you know, water filters for the kitchen, for the bathroom, and, you know, et cetera, you're almost as well off to just buy a whole house system. Then you're not showering in chemical water. You're washing your clothes in chemical-free water. You know, no more ring around the toilet. And for just a little bit more than what you'd buy these individual filters for. So I'm starting to promote this idea of whole house filters. The webpage, jmccsci.com. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.